So today's episode is part one of two.
It's either part one of two or part six of seven, depends on how you count.
Yeah, and we're doing a couple interesting things today. First, we're going to kick off with an interview with Neil Patel, who's a co-founder with Heaton Shaw of several businesses. And then Sherry and I are going to dive into a detailed discussion of this whole co-founder experience, the co-founder relationship idea. And we put together an outline that's going to span two episodes. There was a lot to say about this topic. We pull out lessons learned and our thoughts and comments on all the interviews we've done in this co-founder series. And we also pulled in ideas and thoughts from all of the questions that we received via Twitter and via email. We really want to thank you if you submitted a question. There were so many that we literally can't answer all of them. But what we've done is taken the most common, what we think are the most applicable lessons and ideas and thoughts, and included them, embedded them right in the outline. So let's dive into our discussion with Neil. Welcome to the Zen Founder Podcast. I'm Rob, the founder.
And I'm Sherry, the clinical psychologist. And we've come together to help founders and their families stay sane while starting up.
Each week, we'll talk about different ways to work well, stay emotionally and physically healthy, and stay connected to the people that you care about. Hey, Neil.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right. I have Sherry also on the line. She's my wife and co-host of the podcast.
Hey, Howard.
Hi, Neil. Nice to meet you.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show with us today, Neil. For folks who don't know, you are business partners with Heaton Shaw, and you guys co-founded many businesses, including Crazy Egg and Kissmetrics, and I know you're working on another project together now. I think I want to kick us off with asking, how did you and Heaton meet, and why did you decide to become partners?
My sister introduced us when I was 16, he was 20. And I started doing internet marketing consulting. She's like, you should partner with Heaton. He's smart. And we decided to partner up. I was supposed to be the technical and he was supposed to be the business guy. And it's funny now, he's way more technical than I am, right? He's also really good at business. And from there, we've continued to do work. And he's also married to my sister as well.
Got it. So brother-in-laws.
That's right.
And I'm guessing there's some pros and cons having a business partnership with someone that you're also in a family with. How has that worked for the two of you to have those kind of dual roles in each other's lives?
Well, our family is very business oriented. Even when we hang out just as family members, right? All we're really doing is talking business. Because think about it this way, sister does accounting finance. That's Heaton's wife, right? Heaton does product engineering. I do marketing sales. Even my dad helps with bookkeeping and stuff like that. So, and even my mom gets involved with the business and she likes throwing in her two cents every once in a while.
So you have lots of dinner time conversations about the business and that feels pretty normal to all of you.
It's the one thing that we all have in common, right? My mom was an entrepreneur too beforehand. So all we really do is talk about business. To some people, it may seem boring. For us, it's just normal.
Are there times when you ever want a break from that or just want to hang out together in a less thoughtful way, I guess?
We do. We relax, watch TV. We're a big TV family as well. Sometimes we'll do some activities together. But we all enjoy talking about work. Work is our life.
It's your love, something that you have a lot of joy from, it sounds like.
Exactly.
So it sounds like you and Heaton started out as you being the technical guy and him being the business guy, or at least that was the idea. And your roles have changed over time. How do you work together now? How do you kind of divide up tasks or make sure that both of your strengths are being used?
It's divide and conquer. He deals with product and engineering and I deal with sales and marketing.
So you have pretty clear roles.
That's correct. Yes.
And how often do you talk together? Are you in touch every day or once a week or?
I would say we talk on the phone probably 3-4 times a week. There's definitely constant communication and we also chat. We're in the same Slack group, right, with all the other team members. So all that kind of stuff does help with communication. We also have roadmaps that break down timelines, who's doing what or what are they working on, objectives, etc.
Have there been any conflicts in your partnership that you've had to work through?
Not really. We've been working together for over 10, no more than 10, 11, 12 years now. When you've been working that long with someone, you end up figuring out how they work, how you work. There's not too many really big problems that you experience. When Heath and I first started working out, like our first year, it was tough. Not tough in the way in which we'd argue or get mad at each other or anything like that. It was more so who's doing well, what are our skill sets, right? How do we play off of each other? etc. It just takes a while to learn how each other works. But think of it like as a marriage or dating. Right when you get to know someone, things aren't always perfect. But if you look at a married couple 30, 40 years later down the road, sure, they may bicker every day or every once in a while, but they know each other really well. And that's like Heath and I, right? We don't really bicker, but we know each other really well, our strengths, our weaknesses, what to focus on, what not to focus on, and how we can motivate each other to move faster.
Yeah, I can imagine that gets a lot easier over time. Like you said, in a marriage, we've used that analogy ourselves on the podcast here. I think you also build up a trust bank, right? It's like this bank of trust so that if one of you makes a decision the other may not agree with, it's like you have 10 years of history now. And so you kind of let it go, I'd imagine.
Yeah, like when he wants to do product stuff, I don't even ask him. He doesn't even really ask me if I want to know, he would. But he more so just goes and makes the decisions, and he should, because I trust him, and he typically always makes the right decision for that kind of stuff. Just like when I want to do marketing or sales stuff, he doesn't question me saying, hey, are you sure we should be doing this, etc. Now, if I need help or there's ways he can help me think things through, so that way, let's say technology plays a role and it makes it more automated or it helps save costs or time, etc., he does. But he just lets me do my thing and I let him do his thing, and we usually meet in the middle and connect one way or another.
Has there been any time during the time you've worked together where you thought to yourself, boy, this relationship or this partnership is on the rocks, like we could potentially end this thing? Has it ever gotten that bad, or you just haven't had many conflicts?
No, we haven't had many conflicts. Yes, I'll keep in mind, my sister is his wife. Mm-hmm. She's a good mediator too. She'll tell me like when Heathen's stressed out, or she'll tell him when I'm stressed out or things aren't going as well, and she helps mediate.
Yeah, you can imagine that having that third player in this could make things more complex if your sister, it sounds like she's pretty good at it, or pretty knowledgeable and stable, I guess. But you can imagine someone that could also go the other way if the person was less helpful.
You got it right. And my sister's really logical.
Do the two of you split all of your ventures? Have you gone off and started businesses that Heaton is not involved in? Or do you have a blanket agreement, or do you basically discuss start a new business? Hey, Heaton, do you want to be part of this?
We just do everything together.
And did you discuss that at one point, or has it just become an understanding?
Become an understanding. We don't really discuss much like that. It's always been like that.
Was there a point when you formalized the terms of the relationship? You sat with an attorney and thought through if one of you wanted to leave?
Nah, it's family. Money comes and goes, right? Family's forever.
Another one of these interviews is with an entrepreneur and his brother, and they were co-founders, and that fell apart, and now they're not talking. So I know you've been around the business probably long enough to have seen co-founder relationships fall apart. What are some of the mistakes that you think people make in co-founder relationships that make them not work or make them stressful?
Communication. So one, people don't have a good line of communication. They also let things just like bottle up instead of discussing things. Two, parties aren't too logical. Heath and I founded analytics companies. Think about how data-driven we are, right? If we keep co-founding database companies, right? Like all numbers and computation-based. So when we make decisions, him and I aren't that emotional. We really just look at the numbers. We're like, all right, we're not doing anything unethical. These numbers show it's going to go up and to the right. All right, cool. Or if he wants to try one thing, I don't want to try something else, and I have reason on why my version will work better than his version or his idea or whatever, we're like, all right, let's just A-B test it and do both and see whatever converts better, and we'll just go with that one. Like, we're both really logical.
So your ability to use that analytical part of your brain has kind of saved your relationship from getting dramatic or complicated.
Yes, but if you look at both him and I, we're both probably too analytical in everything we do in life, right? In our personal lives, there's not too much emotion. Even my sister, a very logical person, there's not too much emotion.
Well, it sounds like you've found a way to make that work really well. It's something that's like become an advantage for your partnership.
Yes, worked out really well. We have no issues. We prefer not being emotional people, right? Some people like it, but my sister's even like awesome. For example, like when she was pregnant, she was doing support emails like an hour before she was giving birth.
Wow, that's a family business. I don't think you can pay someone enough to want to do that unless they intrinsically want to. So what advice do you give to people who are thinking about working with a co-founder?
If you're going to work with the co-founder, think of it this way. It's like a marriage. You better get to know the person before you get into a relationship or a partnership. And here's why. I actually believe a divorce in business is much more messier than a divorce in marriage, right? Especially if you have a successful company. If you don't, it doesn't matter. If you have a company that's spitting off millions and millions of dollars, splitting away is a very hard thing.
There's a lot of lives usually at play when a business like that falls apart.
That's correct, because every single person within your corporation is like a family member, a team member, right?
And some of the ways that I've heard of founders trying to protect against that kind of implosion is formalizing a way for people to leave if they want to at some point. So I'm so curious about you guys not having done that. I mean, obviously your family and there's these other ties that bind you, but in some ways that seems like a logical step to sort of protect what you've built.
What's worked between us and what's really helped is it's like the dynamics, the group dynamics. Although it's just him and I partners, is almost like three partners and my sister being the mediator.
So you have this other layer of glue that holds you together.
That's correct. Without her, I think it wouldn't be as successful.
That's fascinating. I haven't heard of a scenario like this. I mean, I guess I hadn't thought it through that it sounds like she's kind of an integral part of the longevity of your partnership. Because frankly, the fact that you guys have been partners this long is really kind of an anomaly in startup space. Most folks, if the partnership lasts at all, they do it for one company, you know, and then they split up and go their separate ways. So you guys really have something I think that a lot of people admire, because not having a co-founder is hard, right? There's just more loneliness and there's more hard things to fight through. Have you ever imagined, I mean, I guess you started working with Heaton when you were 16 or 17. Have you ever imagined what it would be like to start a company as a single founder?
I have not.
Okay. Just because all you've ever known is working with Heaton, and it sounds like it just worked so well for you guys.
Yeah, it's worked really well. So why not just keep continuing?
Right.
You don't fix something that's not broken, right?
Right.
Any other advice that you like to give to people when they ask you about co-founders?
Just make sure whoever you pick, they compliment you in one way or another, right? Like if you're a business person, you don't want to just partner up with a business person. When I started off, I was more technical and I had no clue about anything business related. Ethan was going to college for business. I'm not saying going to college is the end all be all, but that's what he wanted to specialize in. So it's like he had a different skill set to bring to the table than I did at the time, right? And that helps. The same thing goes, that's why if you look at like Techstars and Y Combinator, like, oh, let's put together a designer, an engineer, and a marketer or a business person, right? They want groups that are made up of different types of individuals because you can get more done faster. The last thing you want is three business people sitting around the table being like, all right, we need to build a product. How are we going to get started?
So you want to make sure that everyone has something to contribute and that you need each other. It sounds like you need each other's skills in that scenario.
That's correct.
I find it interesting that you guys made the switch. As you said, you were more technical up front. Heaton probably had more business acumen. And then you guys have made a switch. How did that switch happen? Did it happen really quickly or was it gradually over time? Did you ever discuss it out loud or did it just kind of happen organically over time?
Happened organically over time, right? I was never really that technical, but he's actually extremely technical now and we're both good at business. So I just enjoy marketing. He enjoys product and engineering.
What's next for you guys? How do you see the partnership growing over the next 10 years?
I don't know next 10 years, but we just keep pushing forward and building companies. You should see a new one launch within 6 months at the latest.
Yeah, I've heard some rumblings about that. If folks want to hear more about what you're up to, I'm assuming they can go to quicksprout.com, sign up for your list. Is that where you'll let people know about what you guys are working on?
Exactly.
We've talked with now 6 different founders about their co-founder relationships. Some of them really incredible and really strong. Some of them really messy and fell apart. I guess I'd like to go back to the beginning and think about the general question of why someone would work with a co-founder.
I think it's a really good question to think about. I think the answer is you don't have to. A lot of businesses are started and grown without a co-founder relationship, just with a single founder. I know that there's a bias towards it in the funded world, the funded space, especially with younger founders. Let's say you get a 23-year-old kid who's raising $500,000 from an angel or from a micro VC. They really want these younger kids to have the support and the network of having a co-founder, and there's accountability there too. So I think that's a small piece of it. I also think there's a ton of support that comes with it, even if you're not young and raising millions of dollars. This is a long, hard slog, no matter how you're doing it. And having someone there who has your back, if the relationship is successful, can really make the difference between you flaming out mentally, making poor decisions, working yourself to the bone, to the point of burnout, versus having someone there who, like in a marriage, is there to help keep you sane and there to help help you make decisions and to bear the burden of being a founder with you. I think that's probably the key, like the number one reason I think you would want one.
So the emotional support and the camaraderie that comes with doing this insane lifestyle.
I think so. I mean, and there's also the aspect of having complementary skill sets. I think that shouldn't be underrated.
And I think all of the kind of happy co-founder couples, for lack of a better term, that we talked with at least began with that complementary skill set model, where one person was more technical and one person was more marketing business. Generally,
I would agree with that. And the ones that I've seen where it is two developers and they both just want to write code and neither one wants to do the marketing, they don't tend to work. You have to have this division of labor, I think, in order to have this long-term success.
Some of the questions that we got were about different ways of setting up this kind of relationship. And, you know, it led to you and I having a conversation offline about the difference between co-founders and partners. And when I think about what I know of your work life, you've had lots of different kinds of partnerships. In fact, most of your ventures have involved another person at a pretty integrated level, but not necessarily a co-founder. So can you maybe outline for folks like me who are thinking about this for sort of the first time, the distinction between a co-founder and a partner?
It was an interesting anomaly, I guess, that you pointed out in that with an early software product I had called .NET Invoice, and then kind of with the Micropreneur, Microconf stuff, I have business partners with those. With .NET Invoice, I had a business partner with that. I eventually gave him the business to focus on my other stuff. But what I hadn't thought about, because we started saying, yeah, you know, I said, well, I've had co-founders. And you said, no, you've had business partners and there's a difference. And the difference is with both .NET Invoice and the Micropreneur Academy, I started those on my own, right? I founded them and put in the early long hours when I didn't know if it was going to work. With .NET Invoice, I wrote a fairly sizable check at the time and I fixed the bugs and got it to a point where it was stable and making money. And then I wanted to move on to the next thing. And I brought in essentially a longtime developer friend of mine to handle support and ongoing development while I was able to market it and then move on to doing things like the Academy and later on Hittail. And so it was a really good relationship and that worked, but he didn't found it with me. He was brought on later as a full partner. We were 50-50 on it, but he was more of a business partner. And the same thing with the Academy. I mean, I was probably 6-7 months in and I was just overwhelmed with the amount of content and work that it was requiring. This is back in 2009, I think. And you know, I had known Mike Tabor from blogging days and some other things. And I knew he was a software guy. And so we connected on that. Now, later on, we started Microconf together. So there were other efforts that we started, but the egg of the community and kind of the core of it, I put that early time in, which I hadn't really thought about that difference before. And then I think finally with Hittail, it was all on my own. I didn't bring anyone else on. And then with Drip, it was a bit of a hybrid because frankly, I hired Derek as a contractor and he contracted for 4 or 5 months. Then I hired him as an employee and we did that for another 12 to 18 months. And then it came to the point where, you know, Derek's really smart guy. He's an entrepreneur and he's going to go off and do his own thing. And he should. I mean, it's the same thing I would do. And it came to the point where I had to ask myself, you know, is it worth, in essence, having Derek have some equity in Drip so that he'll stick around, so that it's worth his time, right, to sit here and be a business owner rather than he's not going to be an employee forever. And so, you know, retroactively, I mean, Derek was essentially here since day one. He may not have been a co-founder on day one in terms of the risk of the economics and all this stuff, because, you know, the money, I was putting up all the money, but he was there building the product with me from day one and had as much mentally invested in it as I did. So it's kind of a hybrid model where he is now, we are co-founders on Drip, but maybe the early days were me kind of pushing it forward from a founder perspective and then him being mentally involved and not necessarily the economical piece.
And that pattern is pretty perfect for you, given that you are in some ways an idea guy. You have an idea and then you begin to execute, but you don't want to necessarily hang around and be the sole maintenance person forever. So having the idea, putting it into place, beginning to execute, and then bringing someone in to work with you very much as a partnership tends to work really well for your style.
Yeah, I would say so. It's, I mean, all three of them have been successful, in my opinion. You know, we've had no fallouts. We've had no issues that have brought businesses down. We've had no major, you know, knockdown, drag out arguments or any type of stuff like that. I mean, it's always been to the betterment of the business. Like the businesses have been better because these partners or co-founders were brought on, because they really added to that and increased the game. I also knew all of them pretty well. I mean, knew all of them for multiple years before partnering up. So I think that has something to do with it.
So we got lots of questions about different kinds of arrangements. And I think the bottom line is there are lots of different ways to work together and very closely with other people, whether that's two co-founders from the very beginning or a co-founder comes in at a certain point in the business. So we've tried to outline and highlight these six different arrangements, but there are kind of infinite other possibilities. And these are by no means the only arrangements that work well for people. But some of the things that I think it'd be helpful to begin to transition into talking about are the things that are going to be important no matter what your equity split is. And those are some of the relational things that come up when people are working closely together. So another set of questions that we received from listeners was really about kind of the distinction between co-founders and friends. Like, do you have to be friends? Do you have to have fun together? Do you have to like each other? So maybe we can talk about that for a little bit.
Yeah, I think if you look back at the six founders we interviewed, we have Ian, who's partners with Dan, and they were friends beforehand, but Ian was also Dan's boss at a company, which is kind of interesting to think about. So they did have, there was some power differential there early on, but they were also friends. And then with Anthony, it was his brother. With Mel and Flash, they're married. Anders were really close friends, actually said too much, right? We were too close of friends to do this. And then Jordan just found a technical compliment to himself. So they were not friends in advance. And finally, Neil is essentially partners with his brother-in-law. So there's several different levels to this in terms of, I think, how deep the relationship is in advance. And that's what we were trying to look at throughout these six interviews.
So there's a benefit to being friends. Obviously, you're going to work together. You're going to spend a lot of time together. And it's helpful that you like the person and that you get along with them, that you enjoy their company, you enjoy how they talk and sort of operate in the world. Unless you're Heaton and Neil, where there seems to be like a seamless partnership between family and business, and that just seems to work very well and seamlessly for them. I think it's helpful to have some clear discussion about the different roles that people play in each other's lives, like articulating the commitment to the business and to the work and making sure that the friendship supports that and not the other way around.
Yeah, I think Heaton and Neil's arrangement is pretty unique. I don't know of any others like that. I don't know if I would use it as a model of something other people should necessarily duplicate, because I think their relationship is pretty special, to be honest.
In Anders' situation, it was a group of friends and they thought it'd be fun to do a company together. But the friendship drove the business and there wasn't really any reason for them to be co-founders except that they liked each other.
Yeah.
And that sounds like it was a recipe for disaster.
And we see that. I mean, most of the examples, I have seen other folks do that, and that does not tend to work out well. Paul Graham talks about this a lot. He says college buddies who were dorm roommates, unless there's really a unique synergy of their skills and they really are complementary rather than two hackers or two designers, they tend to not work out.
What I also think is really interesting about Dan and Ian is that they went into the business sort of business-minded with complementary skills. They liked each other. They were friends. They knew each other, but they were pretty driven by the business. But now that they have grown a business, sold it, had these different iterations of their work together, grown the DC, they're pretty committed to their relationship. And I think they are doing business things that they think are fun together, but they also are really committed to the partnership. So yeah. In a sense, they've come around the other side where it's like, we don't care what we're going to do. We just want to make sure we do it together. And I'm being a little bit glib. I don't think they would say that exactly, but.
Right. No. And I think that's how this evolves. I mean, I think at a certain point you realize that how lucky you are. You see all these, you see partnerships fall apart. You see partnerships that don't fall apart, but they probably should, because co-founders are constantly bickering or just not enjoying it or not in control, or it's just this whole negative drama. And I think they realize something very unique about their partnership and just how special it is, what they found. And that's something to kind of take advantage of moving forward and to use it in other businesses.
And perhaps more important than being able to have fun with your co-founder or liking your co-founder, you have to really respect your co-founder, respect what they bring to the company, respect who they are as a professional, respect their skills. And I think that's what works so well for Jordan and his partnerships, is that he was looking for a certain skill set, a skill set he really needed. He really needed a technical person. So first, he's respecting his co-founders because of their ability to do this work that that's not his strength, that he can't do very well. And it turns out that they like each other and they have fun together and now they're friends, but they went into the relationship because they really respected what each other could bring to the table. And that's, I think, much more important in the co-founder relationship than whether or not you like the same movies.
I would absolutely agree. Yeah, I think that might be, I don't know if it's number one, but it might be, because if you're slogging away with someone and everything they do, you're thinking, boy, that isn't actually that good, or they didn't make a great decision there, or their code keeps breaking, or the design doesn't look good, and you just don't trust their judgment. That's a terrible way to be a co-founder in a relationship like that. And this brings me back early on when we first started building Drip. Derek was a contractor. He was working half on Hittail, half on Drip. He was coding away. But even in those early days, I mean, within the probably after about the first 6 months, he and I were in the trenches together. And I was asking his opinion when we would get customer feedback. He and I would have customer development conversations about what we should build next. He was more than a developer because I respected his opinion of UX and of his sense of product and all that stuff. And it makes for a more natural fit to then suddenly be co-founders. Because when you do have that respect, I think that it's probably the most important thing.
When you really respect someone, you tend to interact with them in a respectful way. You don't kind of pop off or like approach the relationship in a highly conflictual, critical style. When you respect someone, you're a little more careful with your words and you want to make sure that you communicate how much you value them. So I think that, at least for me, I think that respect is a really important sort of cornerstone of the foundation of a co-founder relationship. And from that place, a healthy relationship can grow.
And then I think there's this question, do you have to like your co-founder? So let's say you do respect the work that they do. Do you have to like them? Do you have to be able to have fun with them? You know, do you have to be friends in that traditional sense?
I don't think you have to, but I think you probably will. And that's because you're living in the same community. You're living in the sort of founder, technical, maybe bootstrapper. You're living in the same pond, so to speak. So there's a lot of things you're going to have in common, generally speaking. And if you really respect someone and their work and the way that they execute, I think that most often translates into like, that you're going to be curious about what they are interested in and what they're doing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I do think that you need to generally like and get along with someone that you're running a business with. I think there's always going to be certain things about how other people do things that may bother you, but I can't think of a co-founder relationship that I can think of that where the people had a lot of respect for each other, but didn't like each other and it worked, because that if they actually have some dislike or something, it's just going to become a wedge over time. So I do think that you need to have somewhat of a relationship. Do you have to be able to have fun together, like to be real friends in the traditional sense of hanging out at a pub? I don't think you do. I think it can work. It might be less fun, but I do think that it can and does work when it's more of a business relationship.
Absolutely. I mean, I think about my own professional life and I work with people that I really, really like and respect and have wonderful working relationships with them, but I don't hang out with them very much outside of work. We're not happy hour friends. And that distinction, it works just fine for us.
Yeah. And then on the flip side, all three of the business partners / co-founders that I've had, I have been friends with and I have hung out with them outside of work, and frankly knew all of them several years before we did the business together. And so I've enjoyed that, and that's kind of the way I work. I like to have a friendship with folks that I'm going to be close with. I have to like the people that I'm going to work with on a day-to-day basis, but...
You're friendlier than me.
Yeah, well, I don't think... But I mean, you know, when I was at... We're talking about two different things.
I'm teasing you.
When I was at a salary job, I had a lot of folks like you do, coworkers. And I was professional with them, but I wasn't necessarily friends with them. So I think it's a little different.
So there's lots more to say about co-founder relationships. We have really enjoyed doing these interviews. I hope that you've enjoyed listening to some of them. But next week, we're going to wrap up the series and talk about how to get to know your co-founder, some of the importance of communication, the importance of clear roles, being committed to the relationship, all of those other juicy relationship factors that we think are pretty important to having a healthy co-founder and a fantastic startup. So make sure you come back next week for the remainder of the conversation.
Part 7 of 7.
Or 2 of 2, depending on your math.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder.
We'll be back next week with another conversation about how to enjoy a little bit more Zen in your startup life.